ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It's just your average suburb, but there's a whiff of someone playing silly duckers. Reg Grundy's kids' clothes and stuffed toys are going missing.
It's Leonardo da Vinci.
Hi, I'm Dr. Anne Jones, and I've secured an interview with Leonardo da Vinci, the criminal cat, thieving mastermind, for my podcast series, Nature's Most Wanted.
What the duck?
On ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Norman, when was the last time that you experienced cephalalgia?
I think you mean cephalgia, do you?
Do I?
Yeah, cephalgia? Possibly. Yeah. Cephalalgia? Sorry to be correcting you, you know, live on
please,
air.
Please correct my Greek. I'm not a native speaker. I've never been accused of being a Greek speaker. And I'm
cephalgia. I say cephalalgia.
What do you say?
Cephalgia.
Cephalgia.
It's a pain in the head.
A pain in the head, quite literally.
Rather than me being a pain in the neck, it's a pain in the head.
So to answer my question, when was the last time you felt one, right as I started asking you these questions?
I get them quite a lot. I'm a headachy person since childhood.
Well, same here, and it's the same for many of our listeners here to What's That Rash? Because it is the health question that everyone is asking about this week. So we've got Susan and Adam here asking about headaches in particular today. Could you tell us, listeners, of any studies that make good suggestions that could be helpful for stress headaches? And with Adam's question, I'm only going to give you part of Adam's question for now because there's a fun second chapter to Adam's story. But basically, Adam wants to know if we could do a show explaining the latest research and theories about cluster headaches, for which, Adam says, I may be an N equals one.
So can people remember what an N equals one? If you've been listening to Watch That Rash for a long time, you will. It's a while since we spoke about it.
Yeah, it is. So, of course, it is a study in which the number of participants or subjects in the study is one. Normally, you and I, Norman, would dismiss anything with such a small sample size, but they are often very fun. So we love an N equals one here at What's That Rash.
Which is good, because cluster headaches aren't fun.
No, indeed. So Susan's asking about stress headaches. Adam's asking about cluster headaches. You and I have spoken before, I think, on the health report about migraines. I personally have tension headaches fairly regularly. There's a lot to cover with headache. We are not going to be able to cover it all in a single episode of What's That Rash? Consider this your little tasting plate of headache science, after which we will kind of fill in some of the gaps in future What's That Rash episodes.
Indeed. So there's one big message I've got for anybody listening, is you might have heard that both Tegan and I have had headaches for a long time. I get migraine, which we'll talk about. Tegan will talk about migraine and she'll talk about that. But no, seriously, the key thing to remember here is if you get a headache out of the blue and you haven't had it before, or it's very different or more severe, it doesn't actually matter. If it's a new symptom, you need to go and get it checked out. If you've had headaches for years and it's just the same, pretty similar to others, it might be getting more severe or less severe, you know, you'll make your decision about when you go and see your GP. But if it's coming out of the blue and you've never had it before, particularly if it wakes you up during the night or it's worse in the morning and it's not going away and it's progressing, then you really need to get it checked out.
I mean, this is where people would usually make the kindergarten cop joke of like, it's not a tumour. But really what you're saying is it could be a tumour or something life-threatening.
Yeah, or it could be
health-threatening.
Yeah, or it could be for the first time in your life you've got sinusitis and you've got a headache from that. And
got it.
We probably overdo brain scans in people who clearly don't have a serious cause of headache. But some people don't get brain scans who perhaps should. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's malignant. It could be a benign tumour, or it could be an infection. It could be meningitis. I don't want to scare the shit out of you, but nonetheless, a new symptoms involving the head, it needs to get sorted out. And of course, it is a sign of a stroke sometimes, again, a new symptom. And if it's affecting your speech, your face, whether or not you can lift your arms, you know, the whole fast thing, then you, in that case, need to call the ambulance and get to emergency department. This is not something to hang around about.
So now that you've put the absolute fear of God into people, Norman, I mean, you've given that sort of advice before, new symptom, like trust yourself to go and seek medical attention if you think you need it.
And call the ambulance if you've got other symptoms that might be a stroke.
Absolutely.
Because time counts.
So let's say that that's not the case for Adam, for Susan, for other people who, like you and me, have had headaches on and off throughout their lives. And you kind of go, I'm pretty sure this isn't killing me, but I don't like it. What can I do about it? That's what we're going to talk about today. So a couple of different types of headaches. We're not going to be able to give a comprehensive list, like I said before. Some people get tension headaches, a tightness or pressure around your head. You mentioned migraine before, Norman. As you said, we'll talk to it. A sinus headache where maybe you've got congestion and that kind of makes you feel like you've got pain behind your eyes or in your cheekbones, across your bridge of your nose. You know that feeling if you've ever had the flu. There's something horrendous called an ice pick headache, which is a stabbing pain that lasts a few seconds but can come back. Or a thunderclap headache.
Tends to be if you've been a communist leader of the Soviet army. Escape to Mexico.
Comorbidity of ice pick headache.
That's right. Also called the Trotsky headache.
Goodness me. And then a thunderclap headache, similarly. Sounds horrible, and it is really severe, lasts a short period of time, but very, very painful. And then, of course, one of the questions we got was about a cluster headache. What do we know about cluster headaches, Norman?
So cluster headaches are runs of headaches that you get usually in a pattern. And in some seasons, you don't have any cluster headaches. And then in a particular another season, you may get headaches. It's thought that the biological clock may be involved in that, the circadian rhythm. It may be that you've got lower melatonin levels at a time of year when you shouldn't have. And when you do brain scans, the hypothalamus, which is like a central control box, if you like, in the brain for hormones and hormone control throughout the rest of the body, PET scans show that the hypothalamus, parts of the hypothalamus, are activated when you're having an attack. So it's a very physiological process that's quite complex. Men are more affected than women. It tends to come on when you're over 30. Alcohol doesn't help. And people with traumatic head injury can have it too. And it tends to run in families and tends to be one-sided.
It's funny that it mentions one-sidedness. You know Galen, you know our guy Galen, the Greek philosopher, surgeon dude.
Of the four humours.
Of the four humours, and also the coiner of the word hemicrania, as in half of the head, which is what he called migraine and is probably where our English word migraine comes from as well. So hemicrania, but in Middle English it was called emigrania. In Wales, it was called migraine, and in Scots, it was called magrim. That's probably where our word for migraine actually comes from.
So migraine, that's what I get. And luckily, I don't get it very severely, but people can get it, so it's really quite disabling.
It's not just a headache. That's the thing.
That's the key, and it goes with other stuff. And it's often throbbing. You often don't like the light. It can be you get symptoms come on. It could be flashing lights that indicate that a headache's about to come, which is a very useful thing actually for people to get, because you've really got to start treatment of your headache as soon as you feel that it might be coming on. Once a migraine's established, it's quite hard to get rid of the pain and other symptoms. So can rarely be associated with other neurological effects which make you think that you might be having a stroke, but usually you've had those in the past. The confusing thing here is that if you have migraine with an aura, in other words, a premonition that it might be coming and these flashing lights or what have you, then you are probably a little bit more at risk of having a stroke than others. So again, if you get weakness in an arm or your face, don't assume that it's just the migraine. It could, and it's the first time, it could be a stroke.
And there's a lot better treatments around migraine these days than there used to be. They're much more available in Australia than they used to be. I do think we should actually do an episode of What's That Rash about migraine, because it's a much deeper seam than we're going to be able to mine today, Norman.
It is, and lots of theories there. So let's come back to that. But key message here, if you want one, is you might learn that there's something that triggers it. It can be food, oranges, chocolate, wine. I get migraine after wine, red wine.
Is that a migraine or is that just a hangover?
No, I think that's stimulated. I know which red wines I get it from, so I avoid them. But anyway, that's another story. And starting treatment as early as possible. And there are all sorts of treatments, which if regular paracetamol or ibuprofen isn't helping, can help you more effectively.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of treatments, I'd love to have a bit of a trip down memory lane of ways that we used to treat headaches back in the olden days. As I generally like to do, I did a bit of a deep dive in how we used to think about headaches back in the day, and it was a just absolute smorgasbord of craziness. So, of course, as long as we've had heads, they have been able to ache. There's cuneiform tablets from Mesopotamia, which is obviously where our earliest writing samples, known writing, comes from. The ancient Egyptian hieroglyphs described headache symptoms. But my favourite text that I found when I was looking around is an old Anglo-Saxon medical text that is literally called the Leech Book.
Oh, really?
Have you heard of the Leech Book?
No, it doesn't surprise me one exists.
It's from about the year 950, and it has six different herbal remedies for the half headache. So we were talking before about hemicrania.
Right.
This is what it was called in the Leech Book.
So did you put leeches on that side of your head?
No leeches. The whole book is called the Leech Book. It covers all manner of complaints that the human body can have. This one, there's things to do with bruising red nettle, with vinegar, you put it on your head. Some of the things they wanted you to take the juice of rue and wring it on the nostril, which is on the sore side. So like putting rue juice in your nostril. Mm. Or you could take the clusters of laurel and mustard, mix them together, pour vinegar on them, smear that on your sore head. Actually, as far as like old remedies go, they're pretty tame. There was some other ones from ancient Egypt that included catfish skull being boiled or using stag's horn or frankincense. So yeah, it is one of those things that we've had for a long time and have had a lot of remedies for over the years.
And of course, some of these might have worked indirectly. I think it's been largely debunked or people have moved away from it. But one theory is that the nerves and blood vessels at the back of your head have a significant role to play in migraine, even though you might not be feeling the migraine at the back of the head. And there have been some therapies stimulating the occiput, the back of the head, to try and alleviate migraine. I think it works in some people, but I don't think anybody thinks it's a primary therapy really that you can use reliably. But some of the stuff from going back all those years, going back centuries, may have actually involved rubbing these things into the back of your head, and that might have had a stimulatory effect on the back of your head.
It's always nice when someone gives you a little head rub when you're not feeling very well.
Mm.
I wonder if you've ever had a productive headache, Norman. Has anything ever really good ever come from one of your headaches?
Well, apart from more time in bed, no.
Have you heard the story of the birth of the Greek goddess Athena?
Didn't she come out of the thigh of Zeus?
No, that's someone else. Someone else came out of Zeus's thigh.
Athena came out of his head.
So basically, Zeus, famously a player, married to Hera, got around a lot with other ladies, including Metis, the goddess of wisdom. She got pregnant. Zeus decided to swallow her whole to prevent a prophecy, of course, had an unbearable headache that caused Zeus to scream in pain so loudly it could be heard throughout the earth. So then Hephaestus chopped Zeus's head open. Athena popped out, fully grown warrior. So I suppose if your headaches aren't birthing the goddess of war and wisdom, maybe you're doing them wrong. I don't really know what we take from this story. I just think it's hilarious.
And one of the first treatments for pressure on the brain.
Cutting your head open. Is that really something people used to do?
Well, that's right. It was called subdural hematoma. If you've had a head trauma and you've recovered from it, you actually get a collection of blood in the brain, which causes pressure and can be life-threatening. And that's the old-fashioned treatment for that. In fact, can be the current treatment for it, is that you do a burr hole in the brain to release the blood. And we had a rather eccentric lecturer when I was at medical school who came into the lecture with an old-fashioned bradawl, you know, a hand-run drill.
Like a drill? Oh,
and,
my God.
And he said, if you suspect, this is exactly what he said, if you suspect a subdural hematoma, you're safer to take your drill from your shed, dip it in cow shit and burr into the brain than not burr it at all. So in the exam, in the neurosurgery exam or the surgery exam, one classmate, when asked the treatment for subdural hematoma, he said, get a drill out of your garage, dip it in cow shit, and drill into the brain. I have to say this person graduated in medicine and is practicing somewhere in the United Kingdom.
So that's why you moved to Australia.
Yeah, that's right. Just in case somebody might have thought when I was having a migraine. They're going to burn into my brain.
Incredible. Well, I suppose we need to correct the record now with some actual science, lest our listeners, who are probably, I'm guessing, certainly smarter than your classmate back in the day, gets the wrong idea. So when we are having a headache, I'm assuming it's not the work of demons or catfish as the ancient Egyptians thought. What's going on in the head?
Well, the way neurologists classify headaches is primary headache or secondary headache. So a primary headache is a headache in its own right, not due to anything underneath that's serious. So when I talked about stroke headache or headache due to malignancy or infection like meningitis, those are secondary headaches.
They're a symptom of something else that's going on.
They're a symptom of something else. Whereas I suppose all headaches are symptoms of something else, but really a primary headache is really a headache that's caused by some problem with the pain-sensitive structures in your head. So you've got nerves, you've got blood vessels, you've got chemical transmitters. Something's going wrong with this network of structures in your head, and it causes a headache.
So, like on stress headaches, I don't know how Susan presents, but I know in my case, Norman, that is often a trigger for me. And I know for me, it's a physical tension in my like muscles of my shoulders, neck, and like the back of my head. Because if I push on those muscles, I can make the headache kind of come or go away. And sleep and nutrition are definitely factors for me personally.
Yeah, I think that you've probably described how stress does its job. I mean, chronic stress, so that's kind of acute stress. You're going through 2 or 3 days where things are piling up and there's multiple calls on your time and you're not sure that you're actually getting there. But if you've got chronic stress, which lasts for a long time, it has a profound effect on the hormones, the cardiovascular system, and really how your brain works. So stress, it's not surprising that stress can cause headaches.
So Adam has given us his N equals one of being a cluster headache sufferer. Would you like to hear the rest of Adam's story?
Yes.
So Adam says, I've been getting cluster headaches for about 30 years. Typically, I get them once or twice a year and each cluster lasts 2 to 6 weeks. Over the years, the headache severity has increased from quite mild when I was in my 20s and 30s to quite disabling since my 40s. GPs and neurologists have had me try several treatments in an effort to either prevent them or limit the severity. The most effective treatment to date has been to take aspirin as soon as I get a precursor sensation behind my right eye. Most of the time, this will stop me from getting a full headache. But Adam adds, a few years ago, I discovered another way of stopping the precursor sensation from turning into a full headache and even ending a full headache is to exercise enough to increase my heart rate and get me puffing. Adam says, typically I will do 100 to 200 bodyweight squats. Squats are good because they require no equipment and they can be done quietly enough not to disturb others in the house. My headaches often occur at night. While I know that oxygen therapy is a recognised treatment for cluster headaches,
which is true, and we forgot to mention that.
Well, he finishes by saying, I may be an N equals one of getting extra oxygen into my system through exercise. So this is actually something that has been tested in more than one person.
Yeah, there is a systematic review on this, which we'll have in our show notes, looking at exercise versus conventional treatments. And in fact, exercise outperformed the traditional treatments for both tension headaches and chronic migraine.
Which is, okay, if you have a really bad headache, the last thing you feel like doing is getting your heart rate up. Like, honestly. But it's pretty interesting. What is it? Is it the oxygen? Is it the blood flow? Surely if you're exercising hard, you've actually got less oxygen because your body's respirating harder.
Well, don't get me started, but I'll start anyway. Exercise is much more complex than we traditionally have given it credit for. So muscles talk to the brain and the brain talks to muscles. There's crosstalk between the muscles. Muscles produce hormones which get to the brain. They're called myokines. The heart muscle itself can produce hormones that go to the brain. So it's quite likely and possible. And also because the heart speeds up and you get an effect on adrenaline and noradrenaline, that can have an effect on the spinal column and sensations that go through the spine to the brain. So there's all sorts of things that could be happening with exercise, independent of oxygen levels, that affect the brain and settle down various areas of the brain that might be causing pain. It could be through distraction that's causing this. Exercise is a whole of body process which has extraordinary effects on the brain.
So in terms of Adam's N equals one, then we're not dissuading Adam from his 200 bodyweight squats in the middle of the night to stave off the headache?
No, I think we're not going to make any personal recommendations to people. You've got to be sure about this, but there is a rationale behind it and some evidence.
So we've covered a lot of ground today, none of it very thoroughly, but we've talked about exercise, we've talked about oxygen as a potential therapy. What else is in the toolbox if someone is struggling with headache?
It's knowing the triggers and recognising what those triggers are. And if you're getting a lot of headaches over time, and again, if it's a new symptom, you really got to see your GP. But if you're having trouble with them and they're not being well controlled, just take a diary and work out what you're doing at that time and how you're feeling. And you may surprisingly find out that it's after you've eaten a particular something. You know, people think, oh, it's coffee. Coffee often relieves headaches, by the way. But it could be oranges, it could be chocolate, it could be anything. And just because it's not on the list of foods that traditionally cause migraine or associated with migraine, in your case, it might be. And you can have, assuming it's not going to change your life, you could try avoiding that and seeing whether or not it helps. You really got to get good night's sleep. And if you are feeling psychologically distressed, you've got depression, anxiety, that does not help headaches.
What about, I've got a headache, I just need some pain relief.
Get in quickly, paracetamol, ibuprofen, see what works for you.
Well, Susan, Adam, thank you both so much for your questions today. We hope that this chat has provided some relief. And if we didn't answer your specific headache question, you can email us thatrash@abc.net.au because I feel like there's plenty more ground to cover here, Norman.
Indeed. And if you've got your own favourite N1, do send them in.
We love to get them. We'll catch you again next week.
See you then.